Welcome to the Ritual House Podcast, a show about the rituals we practice, the new ones we create, and the many ways rituals help us live deeper, more meaningful, and more connected lives. I'm your host, Tova Leibovic Douglas, and allow me to be the first one to say, welcome home. Hello, welcome back to the Ritual House. We're here. It is a big week in the rhythm of the calendar, the Hebrew calendar, the astrological calendar. It's just one of those weeks. We have the spring equinox that we celebrated this week and marked that moment of saying, yep, we are in a new season. It is spring. It is here, bringing in what we need to renew, what we need to receive, what we need to connect with, what we need to plant. It's a beautiful time to plant those seeds, both for the garden that you're gardening like in your house, but also actually your metaphoric, internal, soulful garden. It's also this holiday Purim happening. I have some thoughts on that. I'm writing about them, so you should make sure to subscribe to my Substack, which I'll be posting about my thoughts on Purim and where I think we are like missing the mark in this moment as a collective and like how we can do it better. But I think that there's something here, right, for us that we're in this moment where there is an energy and a flow of happening of like, there is a holiday that's about to be had in the Jewish calendar. There is the equinox that was just happening, right? That is just inviting us to really, I believe that these holidays and these moments surrounding the moon and the energy of a season, our ancestors have, regardless of any religion, have tapped into these energies from forever. And there is a reason for it. There is something that is happening collectively in the stars in this moment that like is begging us to plant the seeds for the spring equinox, the literal ones, but also the metaphoric ones, the ones that allow us to pause and to say, hey, busy person that is running around like insanity, which we like we'll talk about in the podcast today. Well, here you go. Here's a gift. Take a pause. Do a ritual. Be still. Sit with it. Yeah. And celebrate. And I think that's not nothing. We kind of take for granted the holidays and like the things in the world because, again, we're really busy and they happen every year. And it's okay if you miss one. But think about how radical it is that you get the opportunity to say yay to spring. So if you haven't done that, I'm going to recommend you do that in some way. I'm just going to read a poem that is, I think, articulating a lot of what I've been thinking about this week in conversations and dialogue with a lot of people, specifically related to Israel and Gaza, and actually just related to like the binary ways in which we function today. I think this poem is really articulating exactly how I feel. It's by Yehuda Amichai, who is a poet that I love from Israel. The place where we are right. From the place where we are right, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard and trampled like a yard. But doubts and loves dig up the world like a mole, a plow, and a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood. I find that compelling and quite haunting, frankly, but important message. Okay, the episode today with Paige Appel is really great. I'm really excited for you to listen in. I have gotten to know Paige for a little while now. She's a new friend and someone that I'm so fortunate to collaborate with on her new project, Riverbank, which is where I actually host a lot of my in-person gatherings in LA. You'll get to know Paige, and I'll just share what I am loving about this episode is I think we really, it takes us a little minute to get into it, but once we get into it, we really get into the deep spiritual truths that I think both of us struggle with as human beings and also leaders and healers, that we like are really digging into the mess of it behind all of it. And I really appreciate that. I think these are conversations that don't always happen, even on the Ritual House podcast. I don't think I always always am able, we're always able to go there. And I think Paige and I were able to go at a, like a deeper level in regards to like what this business of healing and being a healer is all about and like how to like really like think about that in the weeds of it. I think it's a really great episode and I'm taking a lot of wisdom from her and her own lived experience and how she applies it and what she's building is really amazing. So I hope you enjoy. Please come to Riverbank. Come to one of my gatherings there. It's going to be amazing. Enjoy this episode with Paige Appel. All right, listeners, welcome back to the Ritual House. I am super excited to be here with my guest, Paige Appel. She is the founder of Riverbank in Los Angeles and has sat in countless support circles. She has been trained in reflection circles by Kathy Harris from the Center for Attitudinal Healing. She has extensive facilitator training and also offers soul coaching, spiritual book clubs, tween and teen reflection circles, and meditation guidance. She guides each circle with prompting tools and strong care for each person's place within the group. And while I love this bio because it totally highlights Paige's facilitation skills and training, I wanted to share, Paige is a new person in my life. I would want to say soul friend. I think that's kind of how I label her in my head. I'm lucky, blessed enough to be someone that gets to do monthly, sometimes twice a month, gatherings at Riverbank LA. And what strikes me as so true about Paige is when you meet Paige, it's as if there's infinite time. It doesn't matter how busy she is. It doesn't matter that she's building different ways to access spiritual wellness and other forms of healing. She has all the time in the world for the individuals that are right in front of her. And I think that's actually something that is so countercultural to our particular world that we're living in, and something that I deeply admire and respect and feel really grateful to have in this world. So I'm just grateful to know you, Paige, and excited that I get to be part of what you're building. Thanks for being here.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm so grateful for you and for the connection that we've made. And I appreciate that reflection that presence and availability is something that you and I have really sunk into with each other, which is not the norm in our city. So I really, yes. I can really feel the heart of that and appreciate that place that you and I have to just be together in the present moment.
Yeah, I love that too. So I'm just so excited you're here and really excited for what you're doing at Riverbank, which is actually not that old, right? Like when did it start? So people like sort of even know what Riverbank LA is. If you can like tell people about it, that would be amazing.
Yeah, Riverbank came about a year ago, and it is a very simple nutshell place for spiritual nourishment. And I think it really incubated in a time that was sheer grace, because I wasn't really looking to take on a physical space for the next iteration of my Dharma, but Spirit had other plans, and my acupuncturist, Katya, who works here, came to me and said, this space is coming available. You should take it over. I consulted the I Ching. I consulted my teacher. I hemmed and hawed. I talked to certain friends and spiritual satsang.
Can you tell us what I Ching is?
The I Ching is it like 8,000-year-old, 5,000-year-old oracle? And it is a tool that one of my teachers uses frequently. And she has encouraged that when you don't have a real strong knowing, to consult oracle. And when you do, you need to listen to the oracle. So it's like, I think she calls it like a 5,000-year-old Chinese sage.
Hmm.
And it doesn't give you like a yes or no answer. Like, it's interesting that we're talking about it, because I actually did it with a couple of friends last night who were over at my house for dinner. And there's an app, by the way, that we'd use. I have the books and the coins and the old way of doing it, but the app is just as available and tapped in.
Amazing.
So the I Ching, and I can't speak to all the like thoroughness of it, but it does guide you in a way where you're like, oh, there's a block here. I should pay attention to that. Or something's out of line over here. Or this seems in flow and I should go with that. So it's really a long answer and it's very layered. So I threw an I Ching and then I think there was some like discernment I had to do around that. And then I had to throw another I Ching. So it was a process. I had to, you know, of course I've meditated and prayed and sat with it all. And it all came about, which to say it has just been a year of really seeding it in with mantra, with collective energy, people like you, facilitators, practitioners who are offering their unique bit of wisdom. And it has become such a vehicle for my own healing, a vehicle for my own spiritual connection, purification, real dharmic medicine.
So it started a year ago, and I like that. For you, it sounds like it's not just like a business. It's a spiritual quest of some kind. I don't know if that's...
That's exactly what it is. There's no... I didn't enter into it with a business agenda or attachment. I didn't enter into it with thinking I'm going to make money. I entered into it with genuinely a desire to ripen and be in service to myself, honestly, to my own soul's evolution. And through that, there are just many threads that are coming in to support that, to challenge that, to be a part of this life's predicament that will inevitably be a fire for my soul.
Beautiful. I guess if you look back at your life at little page, pick whatever age that you can go to. Is there a ritual that was sort of influential, contained you, felt like yours as a child?
Yeah, I love that you asked this question. And it's interesting when I sat with it, I thought about my childhood and was there a lot of ritual in my family? I think the ritual for me, which would be the most containing or grounding or really like centering, would be movement. There was a lot of movement, athletics, activities, dance, sports, gymnastics, vacations. I come from a very busy family.
You're not busy at all, though, yourself.
I mean, I definitely am the least amount of busies I've ever been in my life, which is great. Yeah.
Okay. You know, I just want to let people know that's like basically me on steroids is her least amount of busy. But keep going. Keep going. But I also, by the way, I did grow up in a family that's very busy. So like I do, yeah. I know that, like I know that vibe. Yeah.
My 4-year-old, she already can tap into my mom's energy to her grandma. She's like, Grammy. And my mother lives in Texas, but my mom will FaceTime us from anywhere she is. And my 4-year-old's like, Grammy is always on the go. And I'm like, you're right. She is. Like, there is a lot of on the go. But what I look back on with that is that those like movement, like dance and sports and gymnastics and all the places that really allowed a somatic experience for me, like sweating, running, yelling, like basically doing incomprehensible things with my body in gymnastics. It's like, wow, those were really openings. Those were really grounding places for me to find in a world where my family, we moved a lot. We were on the go a lot. There wasn't a lot of ritual in my family except our nightly bowl of ice cream. And just this.
That's a ritual.
Yeah. I mean, we grew up literally, my brother and I and my parents having a bowl of ice cream every night after dinner. Which is probably why I'm, you know, a sugar addict. But there was just this real sense of when I felt into the ritual as a child, it was the activity of sports that really helped me feel confident, helped me feel grounded, helped me actually feel my own connection to all that is. Just like a bigger sense of myself. And so when you ask the question of the ritual as a child, it's the opposite as an adult. The ritual now is stillness.
Right.
The ritual now is coming inward, being alone, being more, you know, curled up in a ball or sitting in lotus with a lot more attention inward. So it's kind of like, I love to talk about the spiral of life, right? And how the seasons of our life are always in some kind of movement between inner and outer.
Hmm.
And so I just found so much, one, gratitude for you for the question around like, oh, this is really tapping into a part of my childhood that was not consciously opening me up to myself, but it was.
Hmm. I love that. I never thought about my sports as being ritualistic, and I'm going to like rethink that also myself. That's really, really interesting, the somatic thing. And are you doing that for your children too? Do you feel like it's something you're passing down because you maybe consciously or unconsciously, and maybe you're not, and that's okay too, but curious if that like sort of continued for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, I have a 19-year-old son and a 4-year-old daughter, very different personalities, mm-hmm. very different personalities. My son is just a pure artist, and he's in college at Savannah College of Art and Design. He was never...
We'll say hi, because...
Hi, Rem. You're going to listen to this, right, bud? He ran cross country for a minute, but, you know, he wasn't going... He was never going to be an athlete. It's not his imprint in this lifetime. And it made him really uncomfortable to be competitive. He's not competitive at all.
Hmm.
And when he did have to choose physical activity, he chose yoga, which I didn't even know what yoga was as a child.
Right. Totally. I think about that all the time with my kids. Like, totally. Yeah. No idea.
No idea. I had no idea about yoga until I was an adult, but it's also probably a difference in generations and where we grew up, but he really found his movement through yoga. And he does walk, but his portal is art. Like he's a creative expressionist where you can really see his divine connection there. So I wouldn't say I pushed it on him. I mean, I encouraged, and I definitely, in his younger years, I was not as healed or as conscious of a mom. So I was definitely more interested in my agenda for him than I am now. Now I'm really like in so much awe of his own path. But my daughter is, I think, going to be much more athletic. She's already in gymnastics. She's a firecracker. She loves to run. She's moving things out of her body constantly.
Hmm.
And she's not an inward processor. It's very outward.
Right.
So for her, I probably will encourage it more or sign her up for things that seems interesting to her. Because I do think there is just so much beautiful, like, awareness and confidence building and body autonomy in sports. Like, I think sports is actually, I mean, besides the way that America has completely, you know, bastardized it and made it a toxic capitalist environment, like, there is a real opening there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was such an athlete as a kid. It was like it was so defined me and was so important to me for structure, discipline. And I think probably spiritually it was really important, but I haven't really provided it for my kids. I mean, it's not like they haven't done sports. They have, but because of that toxic imprint that you're talking about, not just for like the major sports national teams, but just even in Los Angeles, I like soccer, like there is such a vibration of competition is one thing, but there's competition that's healthy, and then there's competition that is like unhealthy. And there's just this vibration that feels so not great that it's not that I've like said, no, you can't, but I've sort of like conveniently like not pushed it, right? Like, it's not like they're, you know, but I think that at least one of my kids for sure could like totally soar or really find themselves within like team sports specifically. And I'm like, can I tolerate? And that's something that I ask a lot as a parent. Can I tolerate the discomfort that I have of this toxic sort of environment in order for my kid? And is this actually the right environment for my kid? And it's like something that I totally overprocess or overthink probably, but as I usually do most things in life. but it's something that's like very alive for me in this moment. So anyway, just you're bringing it out for me.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have a tendency to project your own stuff onto your kids?
Oh yeah. But I stop myself generally mm-hmm. speaking, like, or I'm conscious of it when I can be. And so like, it's like, if they come to me and they say, can I play soccer? I'm going to like, even if I have my own internal thing, I'm going to, yes, you're going to play soccer, right? But if they don't, and I know as like their guider, like, this actually might be great for you, I might not guide them in that way because of my projection. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How about for you? Are you able to totally like release it? Your own?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, there's definitely times with my son where because he's so such a different energy and essence than me, that there were times where I found myself pushing because I felt like, oh, he's got to be more outgoing. He's got to be more extroverted. He's got to have more of a social life. He's got to have more activities. Like, and he was just so clear. He would just keep telling me like, that's just not my thing. Like, I'm good. I'm good alone. I'm good with a small group. I'm good with just three friends. I'm good, like drawing, living in my imaginary world. And it was really uncomfortable. Really uncomfortable. I kept hearing my own parents' voice, my own family imprint of, you've got to be a certain way in society. You've got to be a certain way in school. And I had to really like keep breaking that down,
yes.
keep rinsing out the residue of like, okay, I gotta be in the pure acceptance of what Rem is telling me. And two, also in the trust that his karmic journey is different than mine.
Such a hard thing to do as a parent. Such a hard thing. I mean, I'm thinking of the time where, so I have a child who loves stuffed animals and imaginative worlds with stuffed animals. And she was like probably 4 at the time. And I was like, she can't take that to school. Can't just like take your stuffed animal to school. She's 4 that I was having this issue with. You know what I mean? Like I think back on it. I'm like, 4 years old feels like developmentally actually quite appropriate to take a stuffed animal to school, right? There's like not really an issue. But I had all the like messaging in my head, like whatever that imprint was like. And I had this big fight with her. Like I'll never forget it. It was like this like really big aha moment as a parent. And I was like, oh, she's right. I'm wrong. Like she was just like, why does it matter if I take a stuffed animal to school? Why does it bother you? Great question, right? And to this day, she's a lot older, right? She's 9. And so she's not necessarily bringing stuffed animals to school, but the stuffed animals are actually her like way into her imaginary world, which is now translating to writing and now translating to whatever that is. And it's like part of her. And like, sometimes she'll bring this stuffed animal with the voices into the car. And like, I laugh at it now because I'm like, why did I care at age 4? What was that about? And I guess that's all parenting, right? Like we're all just sort of learning as we go, finding our way, rinsing. I love that word that you use, rinsing out like what is no longer what we need to have. But it's so hard to not be rigid in what we believe, whatever our belief system is.
I have found that you actually do start to learn what you believe by through your own parenting, because it is, if you can live in that gap, the pause between the messaging from your own parents to how you're going to now parent. And sometimes the gap, there's no answer. Like there's many times where I'm triggered by my daughter and I'm like, I have no idea what the correct response is, or the response of my authentic self, or the response of what's good for her. Like, I don't know. I'm in this gap between, okay, the trigger that's showing me I need to re-parent myself right now, that I've got to heal some kind of messaging wound. And then also I need to come back to her. And it's not always available to do that, right? Where you're like, okay, don't take the stuffed animal to school, but wait, why do I not want her to take, like you need to get into your own inner world to understand why you don't want her to take the stuffed animal. And then like you're challenging your own messaging plus like, well, do I actually believe she shouldn't take the stuffed animal? Or is this a projection of control or something, you know, something that was handed down? And that takes just so much inner awareness, first of all. And like what I always say is like, if I'm just not in hesitation or I'm not in resistance to all that's coming in, right? Like all the stickiness that might be coming in, and I can take that in and breathe through it, rinse it out, and then come to the response, it's so much more like aligned for like with the trauma that we're healing, with the new parenting consciousness, with my family dynamic. But it takes a lot of, it takes living in that gap.
Yeah.
Of that pause of like, okay.
The space between and finding the ways in the stillness, as you said earlier, and then also like through ritual or through circles and like sometimes even being like seen in the gap is really important, I've found, where it's like, and I think some people get this in therapy, right? In traditional talk therapy, but like there are other ways to get this. I think sometimes in our society, we think the only way to sort of have the mirror for ourselves is talk therapy, which I'm totally a fan of and it's helped me in my life many, many times. But there are other ways to see ourselves in the gap, right? And those are things you're providing at Riverbank and are really, really important and essential. And I'm so curious how you, because like, if you look at your life, like if you look at your life, like 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't know how many years ago, would you have guessed that you would be opening a spiritual nourishment space in LA? Like was that, I wasn't part of the plan, of course, but like, does it line up in your dots? Were you on a particular, we're always on a spiritual journey. That's my belief. All of our souls are on a journey, whether we're conscious of it and active in it or not, it doesn't matter. We're on it, as I'm sure you believe as well. But when did your sort of consciousness of your own journey sort of take hold for you?
I think I've always been a seeker from early childhood. I've always felt really drawn to and comfortable in spiritual community. Throughout different iterations of my life, they have presented in different ways through different organizations or churches or people or centers. But I think where it really started to come into my consciousness that this is the deepest desire of my heart was just a few years ago. It was just this new understanding that was living in me that I had been kind of denying this part of myself for years, like just dipping in and out of it, if that makes sense. Like you said, we're always in a formation of spiritual fortitude, per se. Like even if you don't think you're spiritual, there's something. It's like I read something by Mark Nepo, I believe, that was no matter how much you hack away someplace else, the fire you left untended or abandoned will still be there. It's like right. You're eventually like hacking your way through life and you're going to get to the same place that your soul wants you to go. And that could be on your deathbed. It could be at age 7. It could be in another lifetime if you believe in reincarnation. But your soul is here to evolve and to reach a state of higher consciousness. So this life, it might be about resistance for you. It might be about service. It might be about making millions of dollars. Like, who knows? But for me, on my path, like there was just always this whisper inside of like every day feeling like I just am drawn to prayer every day. Like whether that's even like, God, I hate you, or do you even exist, God?
Like when you were a teenager child, like this is like pre, like always, like from where
always.
You can, yeah, you've always had
always.
That. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say earlier than 7 years old. Yeah. That feeling has always been there. That whisper has always been there. And then a few years ago, really starting to sink into more presence with it, mm-hmm. more just surrender to it, more devotion to it, more giving it a place to grow, to learn, to actualize, happened with my teacher in New Mexico and sitting in circle with her, and my heart lit on fire. And my desire became really known. And I think that's when the possibility of Riverbank even coming to fruition started to enter my mind. And even if Riverbank, which is something I'm attached to now, but I'm not attached to in the long game, like it's just another step on the path for whatever my spiritual dharma is going to reveal in my 50s and 60s and 70s or however we go, where we go from here. Not trying to plan too far ahead, but I can really reflect now on my whole life being the ups and downs, the predicaments here and there, the stickiness, like not being in resistance to any of it. I feel like I've made no mistakes. There's no regret, like using it all. My teacher always says, like, trust the whole show. And so if I can trust the whole show of my life, I can really see that the spiritual impetus to be in communion with all that is, with the interconnectedness of all beings, with the breath, with God, with spirit, with the universe, whatever you call it, is always been an active call.
Mm-hmm. And then do you feel like there was this like breaking or rupture or like crisis of faith?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Was there like something that happened. And like for me, like that's what's happened to me several, like I point to my greatest connection to this particular path for me has been in moments of hard, where it's like, oh, I can't go on in this particular way that I've been going on. I've been aware of this whisper, I've prayed, I've meditated, I've done the things, but have I really immersed myself in it in order to like actually open up to something? Is that something that resonates for you? Or for you, has it been a little bit more of a simple, not simple, it's the wrong word, but like a straightforward journey? Like, I think everyone comes into it differently.
Oh no, it has been very, very curvy. There's been lots of ruptures in faith. There's been lots of attachment to humans along the way. Teachers, pastors, priests, husbands, like, you know, whatever, like children, like parent. I mean, there's so much attachment to seeing the divinity that is only accessible within, wanting it to look some perfect way in the outer world. So there has been so much disappointment. There's been so much lack of faith. There has been so much confusion on what my portal is. Like for you coming into Jewish lineage, me coming into Christian lineage, it's like, do those portals need to still be like how we're accessing this divine guidance, this divine wisdom? Feeling into my love of Shabbat, feeling into my love of the Hindu chants, feeling into my love of the rosary prayer. Like, where can I be in real alignment, real heart-opening devotion when I want so many portals? Like, is, you know, like, I want to tap into all of them, this yeah. mystic connection. So there has been, like, this place of, like, oh, there's no linear path, and then that's the problem.
Right. My teacher actually has this beautiful image. She always says to me, one of my teachers, she says, like, you know, you are wanting your mountain to have one stream coming down, but the mountain has so many streams. And like the point of living today is to access as many streams as possible that feel right, you know? And like you're someone that is accessing the streams, right? Like you grew up Christian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Going to church or no? I can't remember.
Here and there. Like there was definitely, again, we moved around a lot. So we were kind of dipping in through different churches. And then kind of middle school, high school, I found like a youth pastor that I loved so much named Scott Stoltz. Hi, Scott, if you're out there. And he became a real, like he was the first like embodiment of this pure devotion to service and to God and in this way that felt really clean. You know, I feel like in my younger years, like this whisper of divinity in me felt like I was kind of looking around like these people are like they're upset. They're angry. Like there was a lot of condemnation in the Christian faith and like, oh, I know my grandmother. She was like she didn't dance. She didn't drink. She was like a stoic. Hmm. I remember when I came home from college and got my tattoo, she was like, you're going to hell. And I was like, wow. Wow, Nana.
It's a real party.
She was tough. Yeah. No. Not at all. Whereas the other side, my maternal side, my mother's parents, I mean, they were like smoking and going to Vegas and they were just like filled with joy. So there was a lot of looking at those ancestral patterns and like
yeah.
not knowing I was looking at my ancestral imprints, but I was like, wow, like the people on my dad's side who were churchgoers are really angry. Mm. They're unhappy. They're constantly trying to control everything. And then my mom's side, like they're all like in real flow of life. So there's like a lot of integration of, okay, that. And then, you know, I went to college and found some wild spirit, you know, I jumped off that path and went my own way and just like really rejected God and found a different part of myself that needed to become somebody, as Ram Dass would say. And that was also part of the path. That was also part of like the formation of this human experience. And then there was another teacher that came in. And then there was a conversion to Catholicism. And then there was a leaving of Catholicism. And then there was a embracing of Hinduism. And then there's been an embracing of Buddhism. And so like, you know, to shorten the story, like just throughout my life, there's just been all the different channels of wisdom mm-hmm. that really light me up.
Yeah.
And so that can also be a problem in the ego, right? Like, because then we're stuck in this ego of, for me, of like, how much can I absorb? How much can I take in? And how much can my mind like expand to hold all these portals?
Right.
Like, I really want to know more about Judaism and Hinduism and Buddhism and Christianity and all these things. And it's like, well, where can I just come back to myself, to the breath, trusting the long game of my life, being right with what's presenting right now? So it's like, Tova comes into my life. Okay, this is here for me. I didn't make it happen. How can I be in service to the relationship with Tova that's for us to expand into greater consciousness with the higher power? That's different. Our portals might be different. Our portals might be the same. Who knows? But it's like just no hesitation, no resistance to what comes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a blessing. I talk about this a lot on the podcast. I don't like to label any people as one, right? But I will say that my fellow Jewish folk and myself included in that piece that you just shared, that piece of without the resistance, it's not all, but generally thematically, that's hard. That's hard for us and for me. That is, I mean, it's hard for everyone. It's hard for everyone. I'm not saying that it's not, but there is like an element of, you know, if one has the ability to surrender, because that's ultimately what it is, right? It's surrendering to what's in front of us. It doesn't have to be surrendering to like a cult leader or even surrendering to God, right? If that's not the language, but it's like surrendering to what is, right?
To what is. And just being in presence of what is, with the wow of it versus the judgment or the manipulation of it. Because when you watch your mind, you're either in judgment or manipulation, or you're somewhere in the just acceptance of the wow. Like there is no projection. There's right. No denying.
The monkey mind, right, that we all have. But like, I will say that like, I found on this podcast, like a lot of folks that grew up somewhat Christian in some way. This is anecdotal. This is not, just to be very clear, there's no research on this, but I'm making an anecdotal claim that there is an element of like faith of surrender that is a little bit more built in, and also Muslim, like as opposed to the folks that I've spoken to that are Jewish and myself. And so I think about that a lot. I worked in recovery for a long time, and the first step of recovery at Beit Tshuva, which is a recovery addiction center. And the first step is surrender, essentially, right? Like that is essentially what one needs to do. And that step, I think, takes the longest.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting because I was texting with Jan recently and she gave me this tough shadow work reflection where she was like, you're not surrendered yet. You're surrendering, but you're not surrendered yet. Because in my mind, I really want to be there. I want to be farther along than I am. I think most people do, right? Like they want to be fully purified of my ego and I'm surrendered and I don't need certain things and I'm not in manipulation and I'm not attached and all this stuff. And I think when someone who really sees you can say like, yeah, you're not there yet. You're like, oh, like the resistance comes. Of course.
For sure. But I also think that I don't think it's linear. I think you might be there in a moment, right? And then it might come back and then it comes in a moment. And so in yet, I think not to like say anything negative about your teacher, I really like her and I've seen her speak and I'm moved by her and her wisdom. And like, I do have like my block, I'll say like, and I think we've talked about this offline, like my block is like, I'm not surrendering to anyone. No one gets me as like a full thing, right? Like you'll get like maybe 90% I've given, right? But like the 100, it's not happening. And I do like think about that a lot because I wonder if, and you know, and I'm sure you've heard of this, like in like sort of spiritual, I don't even know how to label our world anymore. So like, I just like want to like name, I don't even know how to label this world of maybe new age, 5D. We're in LA. So like, right. I don't even know what the label is. It's not a label that has existed before. We'll say that, right? In this world, there's a lot of conversation of like the way in which things have worked for so long, whatever that way is, religiously, spiritually is no longer the way, right? And that, so sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe I'm tapping into that energy, right? Because I don't need the 90% to one person, right? I'm going to get 5% from each teacher or each person. And a teacher can be you, and a teacher can be the person that was my Uber driver just the other day, who I learned the most about and who, like, I connected so deeply with, right? Like, and the teachers are just here for us, right? And it's like that. And I'm like, oh, I'm tapping into that new 5D thing, right? And then sometimes I'm like, or maybe you just don't want to surrender. Maybe you just are holding on tight to, like, your resistance. And it's a question I ask myself, but it's one that is very alive for me.
Yeah. What is it you're resisting?
I just don't think that there's one person that can ever, not that there is one person for you, to be very clear. I know there's not, but I can't ever, I think, have a teacher and have that teacher be the person that says, let's say, not yet. I could have that teacher ask the question, hey, you keep saying you want to surrender. I'm like, curious, do you think you're surrendering? I could have that. I could have that mirroring. I need that mirroring. I need that very deeply. I need critique. I need that. We all do, I think. And we don't have that in our world, actually. But that, like, oh, I have the answer and I've surrendered and you haven't yet, that triggers me. Could be past life related.
Yeah, I don't think, she's not saying that she's surrendered. She's saying that, like, being in the awareness of the gray, in the gray, that she, like, she's a beginner, I'm a beginner, we're all beginners. And like you said, I do think everyone is a student and everyone's a teacher.
Right.
Like,
I know the that teacher, you feel that. Yeah.
Yeah, the teacher is sometimes my daughter, the teacher is sometimes Jan, the teacher is you, the teacher is every person that comes into my field. And I have to accept what they're bringing or not, but, like, I have to be with it. So there is some inner medicine for me. And I think when you can, again, just come to this place of I'm surrendered to what is. Mm. You're not surrendering to another human. You're not giving your power away. It's actually you're harnessing your power by allowing no external force to really take you out of yourself. You're allowing it to be part of the rinsing. It's like with no hesitation and no resistance, then all that goes in and all that comes out can be in flow with each other. You allow in what needs to percolate. You expel out what needs to come out. You do it in the cleanest way you can, but sometimes that is through primal explosions and grief and crying. And sometimes it's in a conversation, but whatever that is, it's like that flow state of in and out, just coming back to the place of being an open vessel.
Yeah.
Is to me what spirituality is.
Like, for that sure.
That is the real oneness.
Yeah. Can you release in order to, like, open up, like that rinse and release, that peace is so, and it's the work, right? It's not simple. Like, right. Like, for any person, like, no matter how spiritual they are, which is part of the reason I have this podcast, is like, people think, oh, you're a rabbi and a spiritual counselor and a ritualist, you got your shit together. And I was like, I prioritize it. I'm in the work. I'm conscious of it. I'm doing it. And some days are flowy, right? And I feel the whole flow where every moment is this, like, moment. And some days are like, I don't know about that. And my monkey brain is quite loud.
Oh my gosh. And totally. And I think that's where the permission, again, if we can get out of the toxic positivity of the spiritual world. Ugh. Around the messaging of just be grateful and just make a choice in your mind to show up with a good attitude, like all of these things, which are helpful in some topical ways. But if we can actually get in deeper, come into the spiral, like the ego of the mind leads you into the inner world of the soul. That spiral, if you just continue to walk that spiral in and out, you'll really start to see the gray of it all. Like, some days, of course, I'm going to be like a raging maniac. And other days I'm going to be soft in my heart and in flow. And can we just not judge ourselves? Can we just be with what we feel, what needs to present, what needs to come in, and what needs to rinse, and what needs to go out? like staying in that open vessel, because that's what I love so much about you is the honesty that you're in, that you're in resistance, that you're rebellious, that you're like wanting to find the answers, like you're a truth seeker. And so when we do present, like, it's very difficult for me. I do go to the judgment mind when some people come in and they're all spiritually buttoned up. I'm like, oh, no one's learning anything from you. You know, like, we will learn from you, of course, but there's also just this duality of presentation of like, well, we're, you know, let's get into the stickiness and let's also get into the higher self.
Yeah.
Like, they all can live together. And those are the ones that really inspire me.
Hmm.
Like, my friends will trigger me, and they also are the ones I'm going to go to and pour my heart out with.
Hmm.
And if you can be with, again, in that state of like, ugh, I'm really freaking annoyed at my teacher right now, like never talking to her again. And then also come back to like, well, there's actually there's wisdom for me in that. And just again, like as it is within, so it is without, like doing that dance.
Yeah.
Of like, okay, I've got to tend to what this is telling me. And that doesn't mean that there aren't people or boundaries or shedding that you have to do. Like, for sure, like there is.
But you're very good at the non-judgment part.
I really try. I try. But there's definitely days. I mean, it definitely can come in. And I think I'm more aware of it sometimes where I'm like, all right, I'm not really going to give that any energy. I'm just going to be aware that I was judgmental. And what does that mean? I'm probably judging myself. What does it mean? I probably need to like expand outward a little bit more. Stop looking through such a narrow pinhole.
Yeah.
But the judgment is still, it's all like Ram Dass says, who's one of the most incredible persons in a body. Now his soul lives on, but like his teachings just resonate so deeply for me because he's just so aware of all his stuff and he puts it out there. And I'm like, oh, it's just so much permission to be a human. We're a spiritual being on a human path, but like there is this part of me that's like, oh, I keep trying to deny my humanity so I can be good, so I can be pure, so I can be like holy and like in right standing.
Yeah.
But there's just this predicament that will always keep coming back in to take me into more purification, more awareness, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Blessing the mess. Yeah. And it's like, it's messy. It's really messy. It's like none of us get out unscathed. It's like over and over again. The book that changed my life is The Wounded Healer. Have you ever read that?
Oh my gosh. That is so incredible. Henry Nouwen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just brought that up to some friends the other day and I have it on my bedside table and I read it 20 years ago from another teacher, Ben Donnelly, who brought it up to me. Hi, Ben, if you're listening, I'm mentioning everyone today. But it is an incredible book and I'm going to revisit it right now. Tell me about it. Tell me what resonated for you.
Well, I had an art teacher in college. I was an art history major. And as an art history major, you had to take art. And I am not an artist.
Same as we saw at Soul Mapping.
Soul Mapping. Yeah, same. Like, but I also love my art, you know, like I'm an art lover. But taking this like drawing class was really challenging for me. Like, it's funny, like people would think, oh, taking a drawing class in college is like easy, but it was not. And I had this wild professor who was from Argentina and he was like visiting and like did not speak English very well, but he had this like energy of like, I don't know how to explain it. He was like such an artist. Like he just was like, let's get out of the classroom and let's go there and do it. Like it just like, it was so fun. There was such something so great about him. And he was really struck at my lack of ability. Like it really bothered him that I really couldn't draw. Like he was like, I've never seen this. Everyone can draw. And I'm like, I'm not trying to block myself. I just really can't. And he's like, you can do something. I know you can do something. It's not drawing. He felt like very bad for me. It was kind of like a funny thing. The last day of class, because we had been in conversation so often, because I'm like, please just let me pass this class, man. Please, I'm showing up. I'm doing extra. Just let me pass it. And that was my way, by the way, in school. If I couldn't do something, I'm like, I could find a way. Like, I'll just do the extra homework. And he gave me The Wounded Healer. He's like, I don't know why I feel called to give this to you. You pass the class, read this book, and take it in. And I read it in like one sitting on a Shabbat and I cried. And I don't even remember what I read at the time. It just like sobbed after. It felt so, so to my heart. And put it away, forgot about it, whatever. Many years later, I was working at Beit Tshuva, and my mentor and teacher at the time, he gave a book at the end of like our learning together, and it was The Wounded Healer. And I literally started crying when he gave me that book, and I had forgotten about it. So then since then, that was, I guess, 7 years ago, I have been sort of immersed in that book regularly. I think the reason I love it is this idea that really as healers, the best formation of healing is to do your own healing, right? Mm-hmm. And that means we're going to have wounds. And like that is like an archetype, right? And we have that archetype in astrology. We have Chiron, which is like the wounded healer, which is like apparently on my ascendant, which means that it's just exactly who I am, essentially. So I think it just pours into me because I feel that. I feel like my wounds are my best teachers and my way that I can really help with healing people. And I also struggle with that too.
Yeah. So beautiful. I so relate.
You do. Yeah. I feel like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that has been my journey. My life has been really messy. It's been really wounded. I've wounded people and people have wounded me. And there's just been so much, relational burn down and so much ancestral trauma. And there has been so much disruption in my family of origin and in my own family life here, as you know, I'm divorced and also remarried, and just so much color. And I think through all those wounds, they are in the process of alchemizing into love and into compassion and into forgiveness and into faith and into gratitude. And so they are there as medicine for myself. And ultimately, that's why I'm doing it. Like, there is my other teacher, Kathy, who trained me in Reflection Circle. She's always like, lay down this notion of being in service. Lay down this notion of being a teacher. When you sit in circle and you're going to call people in, she's like, you have the responsibility of the facilitator, yes, to keep the group safe and to keep everyone in integrity in the practice. But she's like, you're just joining the light with them. You're there for your own healing. You are there as a vessel, an open vessel to be with what is, whatever comes up for you, whatever comes up for them. And I think that has also given me just so much more appreciation for group work, for circle work, because the way that the matrix works in circles is that when you are there in receptivity, looking at souls, like their higher selves coming in, you can actually be in so much divine alignment for yourself. Like, I'm getting healed through other people's talking, through other people's grief, through other people's excavations. And I find that to be the case in most conversations, one-on-one with you here, in a book course, in a circle. I find that when we're in the soul work, I keep coming back to like, this is ultimately for me, my own healing. My wounds are here to heal someone else. Their wounds are here to heal me. And it's all getting alchemized in the higher octave, which comes back to the place of sheer love and gratitude for the whole show.
That's so beautiful. Okay, we can talk forever. So I'm going to like let us end on that. But I want to know, because you said you had a ritual of stillness today that contains you, or you've returned to, what is that ritual?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the ritual of the 5:30 a.m. dark candlelit, sitting on the cushion, saying my chants, saying my prayers, reading my daily reader, and just coming into myself before anything else can disrupt me for the day. And then throughout the day, finding those moments of breath and the stillness, just getting behind the mind, getting into my body, just taking a lot more pause. Mm. So that could look like at any time in the day when I'm like, okay, my field is out here. I'm leaking. I'm I'm not connected to what I'm saying. I'm not connected to how I'm showing up. I'm not connected to my inner world. I've got to take a pause. So it could just be laying down for 5 minutes and breathing. It could be prayer. It could be meditation. But the ritual every morning, the ritual of coming back to the chants, to the mantra, to a place within the breath. That I always say that the breath is your ally. It's just a guide for you to get back into your inner world. What's going on in there? Where are you? Where am I tight? Where am I in resistance? Where am I in judgment? Where am I in grief? So stillness, finding it, pulling, saying no more, pulling back from vibrations and socialization that doesn't support that. Yeah, sometimes that can be actually in an active moment of being with people. Like there is a time where I can be around a bunch of people and have to go, I've got to find my stillness. I've got to harness back in right now. And it's almost like a pulling. It's like a gathering of these tiny particles in the ether of myself that just need to come back in. And it's just become a real practice of that awareness of like, okay, come back in, Paige.
And you wake up every morning early to do that.
Of course I don't. Because I'm human. Anyone who's going to come on here and tell you they do the same ritual flawlessly, perfectly all the time. I mean, let's maybe someone does. But
very few.
75% of the time, yes. I do. It's my intention to do it. But I also want people out there to hear that if you get you sleep in one morning, you can find it. You can do it at 8:30.
That's what I did today.
You can find it at 5 p.m. Find your ritual totally. Anytime.
It's my biggest thing is when I sleep in and I don't do my morning thing, what do? And usually I say, fuck, the day is gone, you know? Or like today, I was like, oh, I have 20 minutes at 8:30. Mm-hmm. I could do it now. Revelation for me today. So
yeah. But I love that. That's so good. I do that too. I'm like, if I miss that 5:30 mark, I just move it to a different part of the day.
Yeah. I love that. I love what you're doing and who you are in the world. So thank you so much. Please tell everyone how they can find you and look you up. And
I mean, there's the website, riverbankla.com. There is the Instagram, Riverbank LA. There's my personal Instagram, Paige Appel. I so appreciate you, Tova. I'm so glad we're connected and feel such a heart thread with you.
Yay, me too. Come play with us at Riverbank, everyone.
Yeah, soul mapping is the best. I had so much fun.
We're going to do it again. We're going to do it again. Okay, take care.
All right, love, take care.
So good, right? All right. For this week, I am thinking a lot about what Paige was talking about in terms of stillness. So the question is, how can you create stillness? Is it the morning when you wake up? I'm actually trying this on. I'm returning to the ritual of morning pages. I don't know if you've heard of that one. It's from The Artist's Way, which I highly recommend. An amazing book. Changed my life in my 20s. One of the main takeaways of that book is there's this practice of writing morning pages, like put a timer on for 10 minutes and just like write. Dump it out of the brain so that you can be as present as you can for the rest of the day. Miracles, or I don't know if miracles, but things happen. Let's just say miracles. Miracles happen. Highly recommend it. Meditation, finding a way to find some stillness. Another thing, the equinox, as we talked about, happened earlier this week around Tuesday, Wednesday, but that doesn't mean it's too late to welcome spring in. It doesn't have to be on the exact day. Everyone gets like always worked up about this, including me. It's like, ooh, I missed the opportunity. I guess I throw it away. Nope. There's actually this beautiful concept in Judaism. It's like my favorite thing ever. In Jewish law, there's this idea of lechatchila or bediavad. Lechatchila means at the outset, and bediavad means like in case you didn't do it in the outset. So basically it means you ought to keep the law this way, X, Y, and Z. But if you can't keep it exactly that way, there's a little bit of a different loophole to do it this way. And I love being a Bediavad kind of Jew often, because it's hard to always meet the moment in the perfectionism that we need to. That sometimes it's okay to miss this, like lechatchila, we'll use in the sentence, lechatchila, do the spring equinox on Tuesday night or Wednesday, but Bediavad, if you didn't, well, do it on Friday, do it on Saturday, do it on Sunday, do it this weekend, do it on Monday. Just do it, okay? How are you going to do it? I'm going to give you some options. I recommend going on a walk and gathering some spring inspiration. And maybe it could be in your house. Like maybe there's some flowers that are like sort of falling apart or some leaves. But just like take 5 minutes, get some beautiful spring things that are like sort of on the ground already. Gather it, put it in a bowl of water, take a deep stare into it, and basically consider that this moment is spring and that you are gathered around this water with these beautiful spring items, and you are here to place intentions, metaphorical seeds for this spring equinox, for yourself, for your loved ones, for the collective. Really see those things. So that's one ritual. Another one that I really think is beautiful is like so easy to do spring cleaning, but do it from a ritualistic perspective. You can actually energetically just like sweep out or whoosh out, like open your door and whoosh out the energy that you want to release and call in the energy you want to call in. Or you can actually clean a closet or a drawer. Like pick a drawer in your house and you're like, I'm going to clean this. And then my intention is by cleaning this, I'm cleaning out what no longer serves me and my household in order to be as present as I can for this spring equinox, for this spring season, to cultivate what needs to be renewed for myself. Those are two rituals to do. Rituals are everywhere. There are moments to celebrate, to mark with intention and attention. And I wish you a week that is filled with them, that you find these moments to just create with yourself and your loved ones and your people, to just be like, look at us right now marking this moment together. Do it. Do it when you light the Shabbat candles if you do that. Do it when you go on a hike when you do that. Do it when you place your feet on that sand near the ocean. Do it when you do your daily walk. Find a way to ritualize the little things. I'm going to go now and actually look up the moon and ritualize the little things because that's what I like to do. I'm trying to look at the moon each night. Do that too. All right. See you next week. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Ritual House podcast. Please be sure to follow the show on whichever platform you are listening to this right now so that you'll never miss an episode. And as we grow the show, we want to hear about the rituals that are meaningful to you. We invite you to share your ritual practices with us. You can DM us at theritual.house on Instagram or find us on our website, www.theritual.house. Also, as a new show, your feedback is really important to us. Please head on over to Apple Podcasts and write us a review. And if you enjoyed this episode, why not share it with a friend? We'll see you back here next week to continue the ritual revolution. In the meantime, I'm wishing you a week filled with intention and attention. Take good care.